All right. Well, it's Tuesday, and we know that I can't play songs during the show, so I'm going to try and put a song at the end of a show. Who knows if it'll work. But anyway, thank you so much for being here. Let's start. It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Oh boy. Well, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is July 19th, 2022. That means that it is Tuesday. And what a Tuesday it will be. I am in Virginia, I think. And I'm on my way. I'm probably going to stop in. I found out there are a lot of toll roads between here and New York City. So now I'm going to make a detour. I wanted to go a different route, but it's full of toll roads. But to actually buy a toll tag, I have to go a different direction. So I have to skip a few stops and go just make a beeline for the vending station that I can buy a tag at. So that'll be fun. But once we do that, should be able to, I'm going to sleep in Pennsylvania, I guess, and then drive in early in the morning on Thursday, because that's when the first volunteer shift stuff starts, and that's when the school will let me in. So so we'll do that. I end up with an extra day, so today will be today is going to be just getting close enough to New York that it's not a long drive tomorrow. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that, my friends, is with the... I need to get those sounds on the phone. It is time for world news. So, we start in Tanzania, which they've recently identified a mysterious deadly illness as rat fever. And Tanzania announced Monday that it had identified the mysterious disease which caused the death of three people in the southeast of the country. Leptospirosis, a bacterial disease carried by rodents and often benign to humans, except from kidney failure cases, killed the victims last week. Tanzanian authorities dispatched a team of doctors and experts to investigate the disease in the Lindi region, where 20 cases have been detected. Visiting the region, Health Minister Umi Mwalumu said Monday that the disease was carried by bacterium excreted by wild animals, such as rats or foxes. Uh-oh, careful, Tope. And transmitted through water or food contaminated by the urine of these animals. The good thing is that this disease is preventable and can be cured, the minister explained, calling on the population to remain calm. Most patients have recovered from the disease, whose symptoms include nosebleeds, fever, headaches, and fatigue. Two remain in isolation. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan said on July 12th that the strange disease could have been caused by increasing interactions between humans and animals. Of course, the president, not necessarily an environmental expert. All right. Well, in Iran, a filmmaker has been ordered to serve 6 years in prison. Award-winning Iranian filmmaker Jafar Panahi, who was detained in Tehran last week, has been ordered to serve 6 years in jail. Iranian media said Mr. Panahi was held after going to Evin prison to ask about one of two fellow directors arrested for supporting protests. His wife told BBC Persian he was informed by guards that he had an outstanding prison sentence to serve. Tahereh Sayeedi said his detention amounted to a kidnapping. Jafar has some rights as a citizen. There's due process. To imprison someone, they need to be summoned first. But to imprison someone who is protesting outside the jail raises a lot of questions. This is a kidnapping, she said. Mohammed Rasuluf and Mustafa Ali Ahmad were arrested over social media posts concerning the collapse of a 10-story building in the city of Abaddon in May that killed more than 40 people. We talked about it a few times as they were figuring different things out. The two filmmakers were accused of inciting unrest and disrupting the psychological security of society. Mr. Panahi, 62, has won many awards at international film festivals. They include the Berlin International Film Festival's top prize, the Golden Bear, for Taxi in 2015, as well as the Best Screenplay prize at Cannes Film Festival for Three Faces in 2018. In 2010, he was arrested for supporting mass anti-government protests that erupted after the previous year's disputed presidential election. He was later convicted of propaganda against the system and sentenced to 6 years in prison and banned from making movies or traveling abroad for 20 years. He served 2 months before being released on conditional bail. So that's what's going on there. It's, I don't know. It's very sad how that all plays out. But I don't know. It's Iran's very interesting because being from the West, it's really hard to know what's what. All right, so let's keep it going. In the Ukraine war, Putin, or I guess not really Iran, it's not really Iran war or Ukraine war, Putin is going to visit Iran in a rare international trip. President Putin will visit Iran on Tuesday in just his second foreign trip since he launched the invasion of Ukraine in February. Mr. Putin will meet Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Grain exports, Syria, and Ukraine will be discussed in Tehran, a Turkish official said. The Russian leader has limited his international visits to former Soviet states since the war broke out. In June, Mr. Putin made his first international trip since February when he visited Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, both former members of the USSR, now led by authoritarian rulers and Russian allies. Tuesday's visit will offer Mr. Putin the opportunity to deepen ties with Iran, one of Moscow's few remaining international allies, and a fellow target of Western economic sanctions. It follows allegations by U.S. officials last week that Tehran was planning to supply Russia with hundreds of drones for its war in Ukraine. On Tuesday, the Russian energy giant Gazprom signed a new development deal worth $40 million with Iran's state oil company. The contract with Khamenei is very important, Yuri Ushakov, Mr. Putin's top foreign policy advisor, told a media briefing on Monday. So we'll see how this plays out. Turkey and Russia have backed opposing sides in Syria's civil war and have been searching for ways to reduce the violence in recent months. But the meeting comes amid Turkish threats to launch a fresh offensive in northern Syria against U.S.-backed Kurdish militants, a move which both Iran and Russia oppose. The operation is part of Mr. Erdogan's plans to create a 30-kilometer safe zone along Turkey's border with Syria. And then we have an image showing Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei meeting with President Erdogan ahead of Mr. Putin's arrival. And what's interesting about the photo is that the representative of Iran is on one side of a room and then clearly very far away, like more than 6 feet, probably like 12 feet away, sitting in a chair, is the president of Turkey. There's no flag or anything with him. He just looks like a guy sitting waiting in a waiting room. And the other guy, he has the country's flag and a picture of, it's not the Ayatollah, it's whoever the first one was that they always have pictures of. I forget what his name is. Anyway, that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And I've been saying plays out a lot. I'm sorry. I'll try and get better. Oh, man. Why is this? Okay. This would be the time when we'd say, I want to hear some music. I know. I do, too. I would love to hear some music. Let's see. We'll see if Audacity installs properly. Apparently, Audacity now, the new recently, you know, the one that when they purchased it, it got bought by some random-ass for-profit company that wants to make it better. Well, now they only distribute the app as a flat pack. So I found an old PPA that I can install a package from, but It's just a little frustrating. It's sad when projects die. All right, if you got any recommendations for alternatives to Audacity, let me know. All right, now I'm going to tap my pencil on the table and use that to put in a song. All right, hopefully a song was added. If not, more for me, I guess. All right. Hey.
Sorry, you still in here?
Yeah. Okay. So then, all right, so what we got is, shucks, sorry, I lost my place. I forgot to put the, don't disturb sign out, and so they're coming because it's late. I need to get out of here. All right, Sunak widens lead in race to become Britain's next PM. So former finance minister, Rishi Sunak widened his lead in the latest round of voting Monday by Conservative MPs to decide Britain's next prime minister. The race to get in the final two tightened. Sunak won the support of 115 Tory lawmakers, followed by Penny Mordaunt on 82 votes. MPs will keep voting until only two candidates remain, the winner then being decided by the party members. Mordaunt had been the bookmakers' favorite before the weekend, but lost votes from the previous round. Foreign Secretary Truss closed the gap to 11 and can probably expect more support switching to her from Badenoch backers should the insurgent candidate be eliminated in the next round, promising a tense race to make the final cut Wednesday. Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced on July 7th he was leaving the government after protests at his scandal-hit administration. He's staying on until his successor is announced on September 5th. In the two previous televised debates on Channel 4 and Friday and the ITV network Sunday, the contenders clashed notably on whether to cut taxes to help ease the soaring cost of living crisis. Oh, man. Okay, that's eight. All right. Sorry. I'm paranoid about the time, but it is 8:45. Checkout's at 11, so I can take a shower and be out of here by 10 o'clock. That's fine. All right. Something a little more lighthearted. Hunt for a wild monkey in Japan after 10 attacks in a fortnight. That's right, monkey attacks. Police in Japan are searching for a wild monkey that's attacked 10 people in the space of a fortnight. The attacks began on July 8th in the Ogori district of Yamaguchi Prefecture in the country's southwest. In the most serious incident, it badly scratched an infant after invading a family home. I was vacuuming when I heard my baby crying, so I turned around and saw the monkey had grabbed her by the legs while she was playing on the floor. It looked like it was trying to drag her outside, the baby's mother told local media. Last weekend, the monkey opened the screen door of a first-floor apartment and scratched the leg of a 4-year-old girl, leaving her with minor injuries. Before attacking other people, nearby, according to the Kyoto News Agency. The monkey is said to be 40 to 50 centimeters in height, also invaded a local kindergarten classroom and scratched a 4-year-old girl. Local police are reportedly on high alert. They've set up traps for the animal and warned people not to leave their windows open. The local mayor's office has distributed flyers telling local residents to be on the lookout, but as of Tuesday, the animal was still on the loose. The public broadcaster, NHK, said there had been about 40 sightings since May. They're not the only wild animals that have forced people in Japan to be more vigilant. In recent years, there have been bear sightings and attacks across the country, along with a smaller number involving wild boar, including an incident last year in which two of the animals injured half a dozen people in Hiroshima Park before being shot dead. The spate of bear sightings and attacks are being attributed to a shortage of acorns in the animal's natural habitat. In depopulated rural areas, the degradation of abandoned farmland that once formed a natural boundary between their habitat and populated areas is also a factor. So, lots of bears and monkeys and just wild animal attacks in Japan right now. Very spooky, kind of wild to think, you know, you're just hanging out, and then it's like, oh, a wild animal has invaded my home. This is unexpected. So let's talk about energy. We got two bits here. So one, in France hasn't been sitting around not doing anything while the natural gas issues with Russia come to the forefront. France has signed an energy deal with the UAE to wean off Russian imports. France has secured promises of new energy supplies from the UAE after talks between President Emmanuel Macron and UAE leader Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan in Paris. The UAE has emerged as a key partner for Western countries as they scramble for energy deals worldwide to replace imports from sanctions hit Russia. Sheikh Mohammed, also known as MBZ, was on his first overseas state visit since taking office in May, following the death of his half-brother, Sheikh Khalifa. After lunch between the two heads of state on Monday, a deal between French energy giant Total Energies and UAE state oil company ADNOC was signed for cooperation in the area of energy supplies. Macron's aides said before the meeting that France was eager to secure diesel from the strategic Middle Eastern nation. The UAE is keen to support energy security in the world in general, and in France in particular, Sheikh Mohammed told Macron, according to Emirati state news agency WAM. According to UAE spokesperson here, we have sold our oil to the Far East for 40 years, and now we are directing it toward Europe in this time of crisis. The UAE president's visit to France came after Joe Biden's first Middle East tour as president, which included a visit to Saudi Arabia for energy talks. If you noted or heard, he did not secure any more oil capacity from Saudi Arabia. The idea or the goal is that the Middle East, OPEC in general, could increase production to make up the loss from Russia, but that would, OPEC's job is to make as much money as it can off the oil that it can. So that's not going to happen. Russia's Gazprom says it cannot guarantee gas supplies to EU buyers. Russia's Gazprom has told customers in Europe it can't guarantee gas supplies because of extraordinary circumstances, according to a letter seen by the Reuters news agency, upping the ante in an economic tit-for-tat with the West over Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. The Russian state gas monopoly said in a letter dated July 14th that it was retroactively declaring force majeure on supplies from June 14th. The news comes as Nord Stream 1, the key pipeline delivering Russian gas to Germany and beyond, is undergoing 10 days of annual maintenance, scheduled to conclude on Thursday. The letter added to fears in Europe that Moscow may not restart the pipeline at the end of the maintenance period in retaliation for sanctions imposed on Russia over the war in Ukraine, heightening an energy crisis that risks tipping the region into recession. Known as an act of God clause, force majeure is a standard in business contracts and defines extreme circumstances that release a party from their legal obligations. We talked about force majeure just, I think, yesterday, maybe last week on Friday, when we were talking about Libya finally opening up a couple of ports to let products out. Gazprom didn't respond to a request for comment, so we'll see how that all we won't say plays out, but we'll see what happens there. It looks like there's going to be a lot of pain in Europe for a while to come, and it's not just because they don't have natural gas to burn for fuel or for energy. They also have there's just wild, crazy wildfires over there right now. Two people have died, and it's just it's real sad, real tough. Other environmental news. Australia's environment is in shocking decline, report finds. Australia's environment's in a shocking state and faces further decline from amplifying threats, according to an anticipated report. A survey of Australia's ecological systems, conducted every 5 years, found widespread abrupt changes. These can be blamed on climate change, habitat loss, invasive species, pollution, and mining. The threats are not being adequately managed, meaning they're on track to cause more problems. Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek said the document paints a shocking and sometimes depressing story, vowing to implement new policies and laws. We've seen many of these reports, but the will of governments don't want to implement, I don't want to say governments, politicians don't want to implement unpopular policies, but without implementing these policies, the environment's going to just keep getting worse, because so everyone just makes these promises, non-binding promises, to make things better. But the world continues to spiral out of control. It kind of sucks. Oh, also, Alaska is on fire in the United States. Across the state, 264 individual fires are burning, and it's on track to break its 2004 record of 6.5 million acres burned. Alaska has seen more than 500 forest fires since the beginning of April. And by June, more than 1 million acres, or 405,000 hectares, in the state had already gone up in flames. And then by mid-July, we had 3 million, which I would guess would be like 1.2 million hectares of land. And in 2004, it was 2.6 million hectares. Today, 264 fires are burning. So, tough time. Good time to be fire. You're everywhere. Let's talk about some technology stuff. Tech news. Also, stick around. At 19:30 UTC, every damn day is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and it is a very fun show, so you definitely want to check that out. All right, anti-drone laser weapon hub to be created in Scotland. What? That's right. It sounds like a future thing. A European hub for high-energy laser weaponry is to be based in Livingston, Scotland. Raytheon UK said the Advanced Laser Integration Center would open next year and would help meet growing demand for laser weapons designed to destroy small attack drones. The firm said the war in Ukraine had highlighted the threat they posed. The center will focus on testing, fielding, and maintenance of defensive high-energy laser weapons. Raytheon's anti-drone lasers are small enough to be fitted to military vehicles. Last year, Raytheon was awarded a demonstrator contract to provide a high-energy laser weapon system to the UK Ministry of Defence to be installed on the Wolfhound land vehicle. It claims the demand is spiking for cost-effective lasers able to defeat asymmetric threats from drones, rockets, and mortars. Small commercial drones, which the weapons are designed to defend against, have demonstrated their military effectiveness in Ukraine, directing and correcting artillery fire and in some cases being modified to carry explosives. Speaking from the Farnborough Air Show, Annabelle Flores, Raytheon's president of Electronic Warfare Systems, very scary thing to have as a title, told the BBC some of the additional interest and demand for technology was as a result of how drones had been used in the conflict. The thought is coming into how do you defend against them effectively, making our ongoing conversation with customers much deeper and more pronounced. HEL weapons had advanced, she added, particularly the cost per shot. While military ordnance can be very expensive, drones and quadcopters are in the 84-pound range. Once connected to a power supply, she said, the system could keep running. However, the weapons do not resemble the lasers of popular sci-fi, as their drone-destroying beams are invisible. Hollywood makes it very, very interesting, very dramatic, and this is a little different. It can look a little anticlimactic, Ms. Flores said. Raytheon says the laser system has 20,000 hours of operational use, but Ms. Flores would not be drawn on whether the system had been used in anger yet. Initially, the number of jobs created by the new center is likely to be small, but could increase to potentially hundreds of jobs. So, this is very kind of interesting. I kind of was wondering when we would see anti-drone kind of stuff like that, but who knew? There's a story here called Aerospace Electrified by New Technology. And from a small office overlooking an airfield, once home to the UK's first Spitfire squadron, a tiny British startup is hoping to make a little history of its own, one of the pioneers of commercial electrified aviation. Faradair is planning to develop a small hybrid electric passenger plane aimed at the regional market. It would have up to 19 seats and would be propelled by a fan driven by an electric motor. The necessary electricity would be provided by a small gas turbine. In order to provide extra lift and allow takeoffs and landings from short runways, it would also have a triple-level wing. This would give it a passing resemblance to a World War I fighter, despite having state-of-the-art aerodynamics. The company's chief executive, Neil Chloe, argues that such a plane would have far fewer moving parts than a conventional propeller aircraft, making it cheaper to run. It would also be much quieter and produce fewer emissions. Why do we not use airplanes like we would a bus, he asks. The reason is cost of operation, primarily. Also, if you start using lots of airplanes, it creates a lot of noise. And of course, we have now gotten to an age where sustainability really is a key part of the future. So he decided to come up with an aircraft that could not only be economic to use and cost-effective, but also quiet and sustainable. So this is exciting. I'm curious how that will play out. Oh, shucks. We're about out of time. I wanted to run one other thing by you. Glassdoor is not going to be that anonymous for much longer. It turns out posting anonymously on Glassdoor may be a thing of the past. An American judge has just ruled in favor of New Zealander Kiwi toy company Zuru, which is valued at well over $1 billion, meaning it will be handed the details of former employees who posted reviews on the site. Earlier this year, Zuru filed in a California court to subpoena Glassdoor for information about posters who wrote reviews of the workplace, environment, and management at Zuru. This is a blog post I found, so I won't repeat them here for being fear of getting sued. To be clear, Zuru could wipe Webworm off the face of the planet. This move was covered by Stuff back in February. New Zealand toy giant Zuru wants to sue former employees who posted serious allegations online about company culture. But there's a problem, it doesn't know who they are. Documents filed in California show Zuru intends to file a defamation suit in New Zealand against one or more ex-workers who posted anonymous, critical reviews of the company. I'd assumed Zuru would be unsuccessful. Glassdoor is a giant website, acquired by a Japanese firm for $1.2 billion 4 years ago. The secret to their success is that they bank on anonymity. You're hardly going to get former employers rattling off criticisms if their full name is there for everyone to see. When you go to write a review on Glassdoor, the website's very clear. Your contributions are anonymous to other users, meaning we'll never display your email, Facebook profile, or any personal information. But the thing is that they still have this clause in their Terms of Service, FAQ. If you send us properly served legal documents seeking user information, we will respond as appropriate to defend our users' right to anonymous free speech. We'll object to and resist subpoenas we receive, and if necessary and appropriate, we will appear in a court and oppose and defeat your request. Fortunately, Glassdoor failed. They tried to file a motion to quash it, and the judge ruled in favor of Zuru. So now Glassdoor is legally required to release the contact details of posters directly to Zuru via Zuru's attorneys. And then the judge notes Zuru does intend to sue the reviewers in New Zealand. The PR firm at Glassdoor said that they are deeply disappointed in the court's decision. So essentially, watch out what you post online, because you may be anonymous now, but it won't be anonymous forever. And shucks, I guess I won't put a song in because we talked for almost the whole show, so I guess that's good. A few parting things. Tune in for the Dubious Goals Committee. Stick around for internet noises. Please check out anonradio.net. Hit me up on Mastodon at mnw@tilde.zone if there's any problems with the show or if you have any comments. A jewelry worth millions of dollars was stolen from a security truck at a California rest stop. I thought that was pretty wild. So I just wanted to mention that. I've been hitting a lot of rest stops lately. All right. Well, you have a good one, and thanks for tuning in and listening. I guess that's it. I gotta take a shower and get out of here.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Alright, here, I'm just filling time for a little bit. It's gonna be 30 minutes. I'm in Emporia, Virginia.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.